How is the engine behaving? China asked in Portuguese. It is beginning to surge and miss. It needs to be worked on.
Fuel?
Main tanks are down to quarter. However, I still have the auxiliary. The convoy of porters with the fuel will be at our forward base by tomorrow morning. The engineer can work on her tonight, but I have to have her on standby until dark. I'll need her when they catch up with the runaways. The pilot shrugged. I'll fly her if you're willing to take the chance on that engine, he agreed.
Keep a listening watch on the radio, China ordered. With luck, it will all be over in a few hours.
Sean realized that Claudia could not maintain this pace much further. She was running just ahead of him, so he could study the changes in her that privation and hard living had brought about. She was so lean and wispy that her scanty threadbare shirt flapped around her flanks, and the legs of her trousers had been reduced by thorns and razor-edged grass to a fringe of tatters that hung halfway down her thighs. Below that, the length of her legs were exaggerated by their extreme thinness, yet somehow they had retained their elegant high-bred lines. However, the thorns and sharp grass had wrought havoc on the exposed skin of her arms and legs. It looked as though she had been scourged by a cat-o'-nine-tails. Some of the scratches were healed, others scabbed over, but a few still bled. Her hair had grown into a lank, sweat-tangled mop that thumped between her prominent, bony shoulder blades with each pace, and her back was so thin that he could have counted the knobs on her vertebrae beneath her shirt. The perspiration had soaked through in a dark line down her spine, and hard exercise had firmed her buttocks into a pair of india-rubber balls in the sun-bleached cotton pants. Through a tiny three-cornered tear, a tender flash of her white bottom winked at him with each pace. Her legs were floppy with exhaustion, throwing out sideways, and her ankles were loose and wobbled under her. He would have to let her rest very soon. And yet she had not complained, not once in all the long, tortured hours since they had left the river. And he grinned fondly as he remembered the spoiled, arrogant bitch that had stepped off the Boeing at Harare Airport so many aeons ago. This was a different woman, tough, determined, and with a spirit as resilient as a Damascus steel blade. He knew that she would never give up. She would keep going until she killed herself. He reached forward and tapped her shoulder. Ease up, wench. We'll take 10. When she pulled up, she was unsteady on those long legs, and he put an arm around her shoulders to steady her. You're a ruddy marvel, do you know that? He eased her down to sit with her back against one of the leadwood trees and unscrewed the stopper on his water bottle and passed it to her.
Give Minnie to me. It's time for her chloroquine. Claudia's voice was husky with tiredness.
Sean swung the little girl off his back and placed her in Claudia's lap.
Remember, 10 minutes, that's all.
Alfonso had taken the break to rig the radio. Mickey was squatted on one side of him, Miriam on the other. They watched with fascination as he tuned the set and began searching the bands. There was the crackle and buzz of static, followed by some faint, extraneous snatches of Afrikaans, and then an excited voice speaking in Shangani, very close and loud.
Very close now, it said, and the reply came immediately. Keep going hard. Push them. Don't let them escape. Call me as soon as you catch them.
That voice was unmistakable, and they did not need the acknowledgement to confirm it.
Very well, General China.
The transmission ended, and Sean and Alfonso exchanged a quick, hard frown.
Very close, said the Shangani. We can't outrun them.
You might be able to get away, Sean said.
On your own?
Alfonso hesitated and looked sideways at Miriam. The Shangani maid returned his glance with open, trusting eyes, and Alfonso coughed and scratched himself with embarrassment.
I'll stay, he muttered.
And Sean laughed bitterly and said in English,
Join the club, mate. That little witch didn't take long to hook you. These ruddy Sheilas will be the death of all of us. You mark my words.
Alfonso frowned. He didn't understand. And Sean switched back into Shangani. Pack up the radio.
If you're going to stand with us, we'd better find a good place to do it. Your dung-eating Renamo brothers are going to be with us very soon.
Sean turned and looked across at Matatu, and instantly he was on his feet.
That was China on the radio, he told him in Swahili.
He hisses like a cobra, Matatu nodded.
His men are on our spoor. They boast to him that they're very close. Are there any more tricks we can use now, old friend?
Fire?
Matatu suggested, but without conviction, and Sean shook his head.
The wind is against us. We'd cook ourselves if we torched the forest.
Matatu hung his head.
If we keep the women and children with us, there are no more tricks, he admitted. We are slow, and we leave a spoor that a blind man can follow in a moonless night.
He shook his small, grizzled head miserably.
The only trick we have left is to fight them, and after that we are dead, my Bwana.
Go back, Matatu. Find how close behind us they really are. We'll go ahead and find a good place to fight them.
He touched the little man's shoulder and then let him go. Sean watched him disappear among the tree trunks, and then deliberately altered his expression before he turned to Claudia, striking a lighter, more carefree pose and putting a lift in his tone.
"How's our patient?" he asked. "She looks pretty chirpy to me."
"The chloroquine's done wonders."
Claudia bounced the child on her lap, as if to confirm her improvement.
Minnie stuck her thumb in her mouth and smiled shyly around at Sean. He felt that smile tug at him with wholly unexpected poignancy.
Claudia laughed.
"No female is immune to your fatal charms. You have collected yourself another fan."
"Typical woman. All she really wants is a free ride."
But he stroked the child's soft, woolly little head.
"All right, sweetness, your horsey is ready to go."
Trustingly, Minnie held out both arms, and he swung her up onto his back and strapped her there. Claudia pulled herself stiffly to her feet, and for a moment leaned against him.
"Do you know something? You are a much nicer person than you pretend to be."
"Fooled you, didn't I?"
"I'd like to see you with a baby of your own," she whispered.
"Now you really terrify me. Let's go before you come up with any more crazy ideas like that one."
But the idea lingered with him as they ran on through the forest. A son of his own from this woman. He had never even thought about that before. And then, as though to compliment the idea, he felt a tiny hand reach across the shoulder from behind and touch his beard, stroking it as lightly as an alighting butterfly. Minnie was reciprocating that caress he had bestowed on her a few minutes earlier, and for a moment his throat closed up and made it difficult for him to breathe. He took her tiny hand in his, and it was silken and fragile as the wing of a hummingbird, and he was overcome with a feeling of terrible regret. Regret that there would never be a son. He accepted that at last. Nor a daughter. It was almost over. The hunting pack was very close behind. They could never outrun them. There was no escape. All they could hope for was a good place in which to make the final stand. After that, there was nothing. No escape, no future. He was so wrapped up in his melancholy that he had run out into the open before he realized it. Claudia pulled up so sharply in front of him that he almost ran into her. He stopped at her side and they looked about them with puzzled uncertainty. The forest had been laid waste. For as far ahead as they could see, the great hardwoods had been swept away as though by a hurricane. Only the stumps remained, raw and bleeding gum as red as heart's blood. The earth was torn and scarred, where the huge trunks had come crashing down. Bright piles of sawdust remained where their branches had been stripped and the logs cut into lengths. And then between the windrows of discarded branches and wilting boughs were the drag roads along which the precious timber had been hauled away. Miriam stopped beside Sean.
"This is where my people were forced to work," she said softly. "Frelimo came and took them to cut the trees. They chained them together and made them work until the meat was torn from the bones of their hands. They beat them like oxen and worked them until they fell and could not rise."
"How many people?" Sean asked.
So many trees have been destroyed.
Perhaps a man or woman died for every tree, Miriam whispered. They took everybody, thousands upon tens of thousands, she pointed to the horizon. They work far south now, and they leave no tree standing.
Sean felt the anger beginning to rise through his amazement. This was destruction on a scale that affronted the law of nature and the sanctity of life itself. It was not just that those trees had taken 300 years to reach their full majesty and had been destroyed with a few hours' callous work with the axe blades. It was more, much more. This forest was the source and fountain of myriad forms of life, insect and bird and mammal and reptile, of man himself. In this vast devastation, all would perish. It did not end there. With his own fate determined, with a term and a number of the hours that remained of his own life, Sean was overtaken by a prophetic melancholia. He realized that the destruction of this forest was symbolic of the predicament of the entire continent. In a few fleeting decades, Africa had been overtaken by its own inherent savagery. The checks that had been placed upon it by a century of colonialism had been struck off. Chains, perhaps those checks had been, but once freed of them, the peoples of Africa were rushing headlong with almost suicidal abandon towards their own destruction. Sean felt himself shaking with impotent rage at the folly of it, and at the same time saddened, sickened almost unto death, by the terrible tragedy of it all. If I have to die, he thought, then it's best to do so before I see everything I love, the land, the animals, the people, all of it, destroyed. With his arm round Claudia's thin shoulders and the little black girl strapped on his back, he turned and looked back the way they had come. And at that moment, Matatu came scampering out of the forest behind them. There was desperate urgency in his gait and the fear of death in his small, wizened features.
They are very close, my Bwana. They have 2 trackers leading them. I watch them work.
We will not throw them off. They are good. How many troopers with them? With an effort, Sean cast off the oppressive mantle of dejection.
As many as the grass on the plains of Serengeti, Matatu replied. They run like a pack of wild dogs on the hunt, and they are hard men and fierce. Even the 3 of us will not stand too long against them.
Sean roused himself and looked around him. The cut line in which they stood was a natural killing ground, devoid of cover except for the knee-high stumps of hardwood. The open ground stretched 200 meters wide to where the dead wood was piled in untidy windrows, the leaves long withered and browned, the branches forming a natural barricade. We'll make our stand there, Sean decided swiftly, and signalled Alfonso forward. They crossed the open ground at a run, bunched up with the 2 women in the middle. Miriam was dragging her little brother along by 1 arm. Alfonso ran protectively beside them. The big Shangani was heavily burdened with a radio and the packs of ammunition and stores they'd picked up from the ambush at the Save River. Nevertheless, he had also carried Mickey whenever the boy tired, only setting him down on his own feet for short intervals. The 3 Shanganis, man, woman, and boy child, had very swiftly formed their own distinct core within the band, drawn together by tribal loyalties and natural physical attraction. Sean knew he could rely on Alfonso to take care of his own, and that allowed him to concentrate on his own particular charges, Claudia and Matatu, and now the little girl. Alfonso needed no orders. Like Sean, he had a soldier's eye for terrain, and he ran unerringly towards a section of the tumble of discarded branches that formed a natural redoubt and which commanded the best field of fire across the cut line. Swiftly they settled in, dragging some of the heavier branches into place to strengthen the position, laying out their weapons and spare ammunition, making their very limited preparations to stand off the first rush of the attackers. Claudia and Miriam had taken the children a little further back to where a hollow in the earth and 2 especially large tree stumps formed some sort of shelter.